following program is intended for mature audiences.
Welcome to Lusavino Veritas. This is Sal Manila with the news. Former Navy SEAL Robert O'Neill went on national television revealing himself as the person who shot and killed Osama bin Laden. Military leaders have expressed their displeasure with O'Neill for seeking public acknowledgement for his part in killing the much-hated Al-Qaeda leader, saying it goes against the Navy SEAL Code of Ethics, which prohibits attempts at public recognition for completed operations. Additionally, two other Navy SEALs claim to be the person shooting and killing Osama bin Laden. With O'Neill's claim and the claims of two other Navy SEALs, the list of who killed Osama bin Laden now includes five people when added to the claim of the first two persons, those being NBC's Brian Williams and Bill O'Reilly. Students at Valencia College in the ever-troubled state of Florida are suing the institution. Why? Their federal lawsuit attests these female medical diagnostic students were forced to undergo transvaginal probes in front of their other classmates. When the students complained about having to traverse the sonography classroom draped only with towels covering their otherwise naked bodies, spreading their legs and displaying their vaginas to the entire class, and being subjected to sexual stimulation of the clitoris in order to lubricate the vagina enough for insertion of the probe, the program chair, Barbara Ball, told them, quote, they could find another school if they did not wish to be probed. End quote. The college's instructors, they say, threatened and coerced them to comply with the public probes or take a reduced grade and be put on a blacklist within the medical community, killing their chances at postgraduate medical employment. Some male students started their own suit against Valencia for discrimination. They were more than willing to have their genitalia stimulated by the probe, but were denied the opportunity. A gay male student started his own lawsuit, saying the college refused to accept his offer for public anal probing. All three lawsuits are class action suits against this medical college's kinky public class action. Beyond the spreading of the legs is the spreading of the word about this diagnostic course. Members of fraternities crashed Valencia's website trying to enroll in next semester's offering. One mature male professor, Dr. Gordon, has offered one-on-one after-school tutoring for the co-ed, too embarrassed to expose her privates in public. Unfortunately, that has only served to earn him the name Flash Gordon. In yet another sex and education story, an Atlanta-area 8th grade teacher has been fired for allegedly allowing students to have sex in his classroom. Math teacher and coach Quentin Wright has been fired from Champion Theme Middle School in Stone Mountain, Georgia. A mother of an 8th grade boy found shocking text messages on her 14-year-old son's phone and discovered an exchange between her son and the teacher revealing the teacher's plan to allow her son to have sex with a particular girl between 7:30 and 8:30 in the storage room of his classroom. According to the teacher, the 8th grade boy had to bring a 3-pack of Trojan Ends to class, for which the boy would be reimbursed. Additionally, the boy had to ensure the girl with whom the boy planned to engage in the storage room would agree to remain silent, at least about the arrangement, if not during the sex act itself. The teacher, while fired, is at large and wanted by police. The incident seems to have solved the mystery into the teacher's recent rise from poor student attendance to perfect attendance, and why each answer to his math quizzes, regardless of the functions involved, resulted in the answer 69. Ironically, the teacher, Quentin Wright, has been known by the boys this year as Mr. Wright. Coincidentally, federal investigators are searching for Mr. Wright on the campus of Florida's Valencia College. This has been Sal Manila with Savino Veritas News.
Are you ready? Are you ready?
We're ready. We're ready. Yeah, we're ready. 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 We're ready. We're ready. Yeah, we're ready. 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 Ready.
We're ready for the
California, land of fantasy and make-believe. It's Savino Veritas. Featuring host, writer, humorist, experiential mystic, raconteur, and parallel parking expert, Tom Savino. Now, here he is with Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth, Tom Savino.
Hello, 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 everybody. Tom Savino here with Savino Veritas on this Thursday evening and every Thursday at 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time on SRN1. Can you speak hip? Did you speak hip in the 60s? You probably weren't around in the 60s, but I was. And I tried to speak hip in the 60s, and people are trying to speak hip now. Today we're going to take a look at hip speak from the 60s and 50 years later. Right now on Savino Veritas Live.
Into the microphone. mean?
If you bought this record to learn how to speak hip from a record man, that is the squarest thing I ever heard of. I mean, wow. But look, so like you bought it, you must need it. So that was a smart move, you know what I mean, or something?
Hello there, and welcome to the exciting world of hip.
Just relax, baby. Me and this other cat, we're going to straighten you out.
This is a new departure in language instruction for English-speaking people who want to talk to and be understood by jazz musicians, hipsters, beatniks, juvenile delinquents, and the criminal fringe.
What time is it? I gotta make a phone call.
Shh, shh. The twilight world of the American hipster is an important American subculture with a language all its own. To enable you to speak this language of hip exactly like the hipsters themselves, we've provided an actual hipster to teach you the correct pronunciation and delivery of his language.
Great.
Ladies and gentlemen, your instructor, Mr. Geets Romo.
Look, is it going to be a long session, man? Let's head out for some pizza or something.
Mr. Romo, would you speak into the microphone, please?
I just want to say this is a wonderful thing, what you're doing, you know? So the public can pick up on what's happening, like, you know? Straighten everybody out and let them know where this whole other scene is, where it's at. You know, so everybody will stop coming on all the time. And then we'll get, you know, world peace.
Speak, 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 speak. Speak, 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 speak. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Speak, 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 speak. Speak, speak, speak. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Speak, speak, speak. Speak, speak, speak. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Speak, 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 speak. You know what I mean? What I mean? Speak, 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 speak. You know what I mean? What I mean? What I mean? Speak, 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 speak. You know what I mean? What I mean?
Basic hip. Basic to hip is the concept of digging, to dig. Mr. Geets Romo, how would you define dig?
Well, you know, man, like when you dig something.
Well, yes, but...
Well, dig, baby. It's like, you know, when you dig some chick or some cat. You know, when you pick up on something, you dig it, you dig?
To dig, then, would mean to like, to understand, or to appreciate.
Dig, it's like... No, it's more like in music, you dig? You know what is a quarter tone? Like, you get a note in there between C and C sharp, and that's its own sound, you know? I mean, you can't call it C because it isn't. That's like dig. Dig means dig. Like, if you don't dig and you say dig, I dig where you're at. Like, I'm the wrong cat, it's the wrong word. Dig?
Ladies and gentlemen, now you begin to see one of our problems with the hip language. Each hip word or phrase carries with it an implication of the speaker's background and his involvement in hip society. In other words, the phrase, I dig, not only means I understand, but I am a special sort of person who understands in a very special way.
Yeah, that is exactly what I said.
In other words, I'm saying I am hip.
Dig yourself, baby. You got a way to go.
Speak, speak. Speak, speak. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Speak, speak. Speak, speak. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Speak, speak. Speak, speak. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Speak, speak. Speak, speak. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Speak, speak. Speak, speak. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Speak, speak. Speak, speak. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Mr. Romo, would you speak into the microphone? Into the microphone. Mr. Romo, would you speak into the microphone? Into the microphone. Mr. Romo, would you speak into the microphone? Into the microphone. Mr. Romo, would you speak into the microphone? Into the microphone.
I just want to say this is a wonderful thing, what you're doing, you know?
Vocabulary building. No doubt some of the expressions Mr. Romo has just used are unfamiliar to you. Let's examine some of these phrases more closely. Mr. Geets Romo, your instructor, will pronounce a series of hip words and phrases. After each one, there will be a pause so that you can repeat the phrase aloud. Mr. Romo.
Dig. Dig it. Dig yourself, baby. Dig the chick. Dig the cat. Dig the shades on the cat. Yeah, that's where it's at. Dig. Squares. What a drag. What a bring down. Later for that, man. Forget it.
Greetings and farewells. Greetings.
Hey, do you have any idea how boring this must be?
Oh,
what a drag.
Please, Mr. Romo, just read your little list.
Oh, man. Hey, what's happening, baby? What's shaking, man? Hey, there you go. Hey.
And farewells.
Hey, I'm gonna split. This is a drag. I'm gonna cut. You got eyes to split? Let's make it. You going uptown? I got wheels. Wanna ride? My shorts outside. Hey, we're gonna get in the wind. Later.
In the pad.
No, will you tell him to stop beating that gong, man? It's a drag. It's very hard on the nerves.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Rome. Charlie.
All right.
The gong.
I'll do, please, my words.
In the pad.
No. I would dig to pick up on some sounds. Turn on the box. Put on some sides. Hey, man, get in the horn, call some freaky people, and we'll have a scene. Oh, we'll have a scene. Hey, man, this is all wrong. Who can learn anything with all these words out of there where they're supposed to be, you know? Dig the cat, see the cat run, dig geets, read. Anyway, man, you left out a very important thing about the pad.
Well, what is that, Mr. Romo?
Well, dig, one thing that makes a pad different from an apartment is that every pad has a stash.
A stash. Is that anything like a bidet?
Yeah, well, I want to make a good stash, but...
What exactly is a,
Well, a stash is a secret place where you can put what you got from the man, so the man who thinks you shouldn't have it won't sneak up on the scene and take it away, you know, and you with it.
Ah. Is there any other differentiating factor?
Yeah, man, things.
Things, Mr. Romo?
Yeah, you'll find most of your pads are going to have things in them.
What kind of things?
Well, head things, you know, weird things. You know, like, a weirdness is inherent in a good thing. Some people have string things. Yards and yards of string going all over, or Dixie cup things, or maybe it's a box of lights that flashes at you, I don't know. I know this one cat. He has this ultraviolet ray ozone thing, you know, shoots sparks all over, and it's a gas. Some people have frogs, or Mexican statues, or eyes, or anything that they have. That's a thing.
What do you use these things for?
Well, to get hung up on. If it doesn't hang you up, it doesn't make it as a thing. You sit there, and you dig it. And maybe you get up. And maybe you get up inside it. And maybe it reaches out and grabs you. And it's weird, man. Dealing with a thing could be a very beautiful experience. It could crack your brain. Some people have things hung all over their beds so they can dig them before they fall out, and that could be very comforting. But that's another thing. And this is very important. You fall out in your pad. Now, it's very uncool to fall out in somebody else's pad, man. You can nod in somebody else's pad. Nod, that's like a very hip nap. Yeah, you can nod there, you know, if it's a cool friend and if you're tight with him. But you don't want cats to fall out on you, because sometimes they're there for days and you scream split and they don't even hear you. You have to keep stepping over them, and they hang up the bathroom, and it's a stone drag, believe me. It can be very dangerous to fall out someplace where you don't know the cats too well, because then you're helpless and you're an easy victim. I know this one cat, he fell out in some freaks, you know? And when he came up, he was tattooed from head to foot with an editorial from the New Republic. Very dangerous to fall out.
I can't listen to any more of this. What's the matter with you people? How can you sit here and talk and talk and talk like this?
Speak. You know what I mean? Speak. You know what I mean? Speak. You know what I mean? Speak.
What in the hell are you talking about?
You know what I mean? Speak. You know what I mean?
I can answer none of your questions at this time.
Mr. Romo, would you speak into the microphone?
I just want to say this is a wonderful thing, what you're doing, you know? So the public can pick up on what's happening, you know? Straighten everybody out, let them know where this whole other scene is, where it's at. You know, so everybody will stop coming on all the time. And then we'll get you the world.
Disrespected the band.
Like you bought it, you must need it. That was a smart move, you know what I mean, or something?
Hello there, and Mr. Romo, would you speak into the microphone? Mr. Romo, would you...
We have a big show for you tonight.
I'm tired of that kind of talk.
got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
People dying around you at your favorite Italian restaurant? Well, worry no more. And forget about it, restaurant. Forget about it. Hey, the gang of Forget About It has found the ultimate silencer and non-bloody assassinations. Hey, you never have to worry about loud sounds, gunfire, people falling over you, bloody people on top of you. Because of the boys that Forget About It have discovered a new way, a silent way of killing. For their assassination victims, they serve them Ebola spaghetti or Ebola spaghetti and meatballs. And the victims, they die silently in the bathroom. You got somebody you want out of your hair? Hey, Forget About It. Get him a gift certificate at Forget About It. But make sure you specify they try Ebola spaghetti or Ebola spaghetti and meatball or Ebola macaroni. Ebola spaghetti. No gluten-free.
Exclusive arrangement with Oregon Yeshe, Tibetan divination expert. Savino Veritas listeners may have their tough questions answered. Through the universal synchronicity of Manjushri, seer of all past, present, and future, Oregon Yeshe reads your questions and throws the dice for you. More importantly, he'll answer your questions based on Manjushri's guidance, which Yeshe will invoke for your reading. The price? $22. Submit $22 to PayPal and one well-thought-out question to TJSavino22 @gmail.com.
Should I go to college or not?
What's the best way to advertise my business?
Can I trust my boyfriend to be faithful?
What's the best month for the wedding, May or June?
Will I ever get pregnant?
Who's the best candidate to fill the supervisor's job? May I count on my best pitcher to win this game?
How much should I gamble at the casino?
Do I need to go see the doctor about this condition?
Is Atlanta the right place for me to move?
Should we increase our homeowner's insurance?
If I get the job, will it help our relationship?
Will marital therapy keep us together?
Where should I look for my lost ring?
Will I ever find it? Can I? Should he?
Should he?
Will they?
Will they?
When will?
Will.
Can. Questions.
Questions.
Money.
Love.
French enemies. Mo.
Mo.
Mo. Tibetan divination.
Sit yourself down calmly. Write a well thought out question. A question that you can't answer logically because of obstructions of the dualistic mind. Send your well thought out question to tjsavino22@gmail.com. tjsavino22@gmail.com. And make the payment in the PayPal account associated with tjsavino22@gmail.com. And you will get an answer from Yorgen Yeshe, Tibetan divination expert, in just a few days. Take advantage of it. You won't be sorry. This is Tom Savino. You're listening to Savino Veritas, coming to you live from Burbank, California, land of make-believe and fantasy. Savino Veritas, the fine wine of select gripes. But today we have no gripes. We're just looking over the various ways of speaking hip from the 1960s, the late 1950s, 60s, into the 60s, and also we'll be hearing some modern-day urban modern speech that we will get into in a moment. So let's get right back to it.
The loose wig. One interesting fact about the hip language seems to be that quite often you'll say one thing when you mean exactly the opposite. For example, you will use words such as crazy or nutty to indicate approval.
Right. Like you take a very freaked out chick. If she grooves, and if she's got something happening for her, you say, that chick is insane. What you mean is like she's a good person.
Hmm. Would you say the hipster's preoccupation with insanity would indicate a rejection, or at least a deep questioning, of the traditional separation of normal and abnormal sanity and insanity? In other words, a deliberate reassessment and reevaluation of the bourgeois standards of morality and tradition?
No, I wouldn't say that. No, I would never say that, man. Dig, say you're talking about this cat. Say he's a musician, and he really makes it, you dig? I mean, he's into something. He's free, and he swings. Then you say, that cat has got a loose wig. Because it's very important to work on your brains. Smash your brains, you know, crack them, yeah? That's when it can start happening for you.
I see. St. Teresa once used the phrase, breaking the mind's barriers.
Indeed she did, and that's very hip. St. Teresa swings, so does St. John of the Cross. I mean, you know, the Spanish one. But dig, you see all these cats running around desperately afraid they're going to flip, you know? And they're running around holding themselves together with scotch tape and chicken wire and 18 martinis for lunch. Juice heads are the lowest, man. And they're all afraid they're going to crack and explode all over their friends. And it'll be very messy and embarrassing. And they're going to blow their gig at the agency. And the finance company is going to come and repossess the children. And it's going to be the end of the world. You know, much hipper just to relax and flip. You know, groove with it. You know, you begin to go, you know. And you spew the immortal, the ever word pudding. You know, you could shoot the scenery. You can run around. You could wail upon yourself, dragging yourself round and round and about inside your own head. You never move. You sit there quiet. Your face in a complete smiling groove. And internally, you're on the loose wig. You're go. Ah, yes. I dig it. Ah, it's too much. Too much. Ah, yeah. Yeah.
Are you all right, Mr. Romo?
Yeah, I'm straight. Hey, you don't look so hot, though. I swear.
You did give me a bad moment or two there, I must admit.
I'll get you a glass of water, huh? Now, Dick, baby, was that so bad? The sky did not darken, nay, the earth did not open. Everything's a groove. You ought to flip out once, Jim. Then at least you wouldn't have that to worry about anymore. Dick, once you get used to it, insanity can be the most normal thing in the world, you know?
More Urban Dictionary definitions you need to know. Lip banging, excessive making out in public. Everyone at the party was grossed out by Jenny and Michael's lip banging. Twoosh, a perfect 140 character tweet on Twitter. I'm never more proud of myself than when I write a twoosh. Dick butterflies, a tingling sensation in the groin caused by sexual attraction. Marissa is so thick, she gives me dick butterflies. Fleek, on point. Perfect. We in this bitch, finna get crunk, eyebrows on fleek, da fuck. Banana polish. Hand lotion used for masturbation. Michael got a Sandy Handy because Jenny was out of banana polish. Side text. To privately text an individual involved in a group text. Jenny and Kara side texted Shade during Carol's stupid group hang message. Senpai. Someone who will never notice you. Today, my senpai said hi to me and my head basically exploded. I'm going to sleep. I don't want to text you anymore. Lisa wouldn't stop blowing up my phone, so I was all, I'm going to sleep. For more definitions, visit urbandictionary.com. While you're there, be sure to look up Full Donald. It's pretty clever.
I am Dracula. I bid you...
Now that for a segue.
You're listening to Tom Savino. Savino Veritas, coming to you live from Burbank, California, land of make-believe and fantasy. We have some fine wine of select gripes, usually, but tonight we're just exploring modern-day language, hip language of the 60s, and modern-day urban language of today. And we're coming to you live from Burbank, California, from Lion's Den Studios. Lion's Den Studios. We're not soundproofed. We're not foolproof, but we are 90-proof. Savino Veritas, in Wine the Truth. Listen to us every Thursday, 8 p.m. Pacific Time, and 11 p.m. Eastern Time, and all of those other international times in between and spilling over, etc. You're listening to us on SRN1, and let's go to a master of language, George Carlin, to hear what he has to say about euphemisms.
It's worse with every generation. For some reason, it just keeps getting worse. I'll give you an example of that. There's a condition in combat. Most people know about it. It's when a fighting person's nervous system has been stressed to its absolute peak and maximum, can't take any more input. The nervous system has either snapped or is about to snap. In the First World War, that condition was called shell shock. Simple, honest, direct language. Two syllables. Shell shock. Almost sounds like the guns themselves. That was 70 years ago. Then a whole generation went by, and the Second World War came along, and the very same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now. Takes a little longer to say. Doesn't seem to hurt as much. Fatigue is a nicer word than shock. Shell shock. Battle fatigue. Then we had the war in Korea, 1950. Madison Avenue was riding high by that time. And the very same combat condition was called operational exhaustion. Hey, we're up to eight syllables now. And the humanity has been squeezed completely out of the phrase. It's totally sterile now. Operational exhaustion. Sounds like something that might happen to your car. Then, of course, came the war in Vietnam, which has only been over for about 16 or 17 years. And thanks to the lies and deceit surrounding that war, I guess it's no surprise that the very same condition was called post-traumatic stress disorder. Still eight syllables, but we've added a hyphen. And the pain is completely buried under jargon. Post-traumatic stress disorder. I'll bet you, if we'd have still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have gotten the attention they needed at the time. I'll bet you that. I'll bet you that. But it didn't happen. And one of the reasons is because we were using that soft language. That language that takes the life out of life. And it is a function of time. It does keep getting worse. I'll give you another example. Sometime during my life, toilet paper became bathroom tissue. I wasn't notified of this. No one asked me if I agreed with it. It just happened. Toilet paper became bathroom tissue. Sneakers became running shoes. False teeth became dental appliances. Medicine became medication. Information became directory assistance. The dump became the landfill. Car crashes became automobile accidents. Partly cloudy became partly sunny. Motels became motor lodges. House trailers became mobile homes. Used cars became previously owned transportation. Room service became guest room dining. And constipation became occasional irregularity. When I was a little kid, if I got sick, they wanted me to go to the hospital and see the doctor. Now they want me to go to a health maintenance organization or a wellness center to consult a healthcare delivery professional. Poor people used to live in slums. Now the economically disadvantaged occupy substandard housing in the inner cities. And they're broke. They're broke. They don't have a negative cash flow position. They're fucking broke. Because a lot of them were fired. You know, fired. Management wanted to curtail redundancies in the human resources area. So many people are no longer viable members of the workforce. Smug, greedy, well-fed white people have invented a language to conceal their sins. It's as simple as that. The CIA doesn't kill anybody anymore. They neutralize people. Or they depopulate the area. The government doesn't lie and engages in disinformation. The Pentagon actually measures nuclear radiation in something they call sunshine units. Israeli murderers are called commandos. Arab commandos are called terrorists. Contra killers are called freedom fighters. Well, if crime fighters fight crime and firefighters fight fire, what do freedom fighters fight? They never mention that part of it to us, do they? Never mention that part of it. And some of this stuff is just silly. We know, we all know that. Like on the airlines, they say they want a pre-board. Well, what the hell is pre-board? What does that mean? To get on before you get on? They say they're going to pre-board those passengers in need of special assistance. Cripples! Simple, honest, direct language. There's no shame attached to the word cripple that I can find in any dictionary. No shame attached to it. In fact, it's a word used in Bible translations. Jesus healed the cripples. Doesn't take seven words to describe that condition. But we don't have any cripples in this country anymore. We have the physically challenged. Is that a grotesque enough evasion for you? How about differently abled? I've heard them called that. Differently abled. You can't even call these people handicapped anymore. They'll say, we're not handicapped. We're handicapable. These poor people have been bullshitted by the system into believing that if you change the name of the condition, somehow you'll change the condition. Well, hey, cousin. Doesn't happen. Doesn't happen. We have no more deaf people in this country. Hearing impaired. No one's blind anymore. Partially sighted or visually impaired. We have no more stupid people. Everybody has a learning disorder. Or he's minimally exceptional. How would you like to be told that about your child? He's minimally exceptional. Oh, thank God for that. Psychologists actually have started calling ugly people those with severe appearance deficits. It's getting so bad that any day now I expect to hear a rape victim referred to as an unwilling sperm recipient. And we have no more old people in this country. No more old people. We shipped them all away and we brought in these senior citizens. Isn't that a typically American 20th century phrase? Bloodless, lifeless. No pulse in one of them. A senior citizen. But I've accepted that one. I've come to terms with it. I know it's here to stay. We'll never get rid of it. That's what they're going to be called, so I'll relax on that. But the one I do resist, the one I keep resisting, is when they look at an old guy and they'll say, look at him, Dan. He's 90 years young. Imagine the fear of aging that reveals. To not even be able to use the word old to describe someone, to have to use an antonym. And fear of aging is natural, it's universal, isn't it? We all have that. No one wants to get old, no one wants to die, but we do. So we bullshit ourselves. I started bullshitting myself when I got to my 40s. Soon as I was in my 40s, I'd look in the mirror and I'd say, well, I guess I'm getting older. Older sounds a little better than old, doesn't it? Sounds like it might even last a little longer. Bullshit, I'm getting old. And it's okay, because thanks to our fear of death in this country, I won't have to die. I'll pass away. Or I'll expire like a magazine subscription. If it happens in the hospital, they'll call it a terminal episode. The insurance company will refer to it as negative patient care outcome. And if it's the result of malpractice, they'll say it was a therapeutic misadventure. I'm telling you, some of this language makes me want to vomit. Well, maybe not vomit. Makes me want to engage in an involuntary personal protein spill.
His life is strongly influenced by jazz music. Much, if not most, of the hip vocabulary originated with jazz musicians. Isn't that right, Mr. Romo?
Yes, that's right. It's true.
Now take, for example, the riff, the conversational riff, which is a spoken counterpart of the jazz riff, which is an instrumental solo improvised around a set of chords or upon a given theme.
Oh, my.
Mr. Romo, I wonder if here in the studio you couldn't give us an example of a riff.
Well, I think I could do better than give you an example, which would be me saying this is what I heard at a very great expense to myself from an aspect of my cool, because everyone has a limited supply of cool, and it's very easy to blow it. And I have done something which could have blown all my cool. I have taken that little microcorder thing you gave me, that tiny little machine, and I have bring you in-person riffs, people from various parties, things were, scenes were going on. Like last week at the feast of the Saturday night delightful pudding, which we call it. Like, you have to call something more than what it is in order to make it more appealing, because you say...
Fine, Mr. Romo. Yeah. Thank you very much.
I thought you'd dig it.
In the control booth there, would you run the tape?
Yeah. There is this cat, man. A very far-out cat. Like, he had weird ideas. Couldn't stop his head, you know? He was hip, he was in some kind of genius, but dig. Like, this cat was such an out-genius that the thing he was a genius at hadn't been invented yet. So what does he do? He decides he's going to be the world's most esoteric concert promoter, you think? He gets these enormous posters printed up, and he puts them all over town, and they say, "He is coming." And people look at the posters, and they say, "Oh, that, wow." Well, like, it's difficult to arouse anybody's interest in him. Then about a week and a half later, new posters go up. Big ones, brighter ones. They shine at night and says, "He is coming to Carnegie Hall." And then a little later, "He is coming to Carnegie Hall on October 23rd. And now people are hung up. They're beginning to get fascinated. Tickets are selling. Then there's a gigantic full-page ad in the New York Times. "He is coming tonight." Crowds now. They've begun to mill out in front. And there are these posters 20 feet high that say, in old English script, "He is here." Now, people are jammed. It's standing room only, 8:45. There's this hush of expectancy. The house lights dim. They take too long to dim. Little hanger. Then the curtain rises. In the middle of the stage is this gigantic sign. Man, he has gone.
When the cigarette ashes have a tendency to fall in it, you know, I sweep them up and I throw them out. I don't believe that I interfere with the tone of the violin when it's in use. And when they're playing it, I pick a harmonic, resonant frequency and I hum. I like to think I add to the tone. I hear rumors that they're going to tear it down and put up one of those electric 12-string steel guitars. Not a drag. I understand that when they condemn a property, they have to move you to a dwelling of similar rent, condition, district. Like they couldn't put me in a trombone, you know. A cello, maybe, or a bass. Except that's kind of silly, you know, one guy living in the bass. Maybe I could live in one of those, what do you call those oriental things? Those triangular banjos? A balalaika. That'd be a groove. I could decorate it kind of Danish modern. If they do condemn the old fiddle here, I think I'll put in for a balalaika. Yeah.
Like, they're sending up a spaceship on a translunar orbit, you know?
And they sent up this astronaut, man, and he's been hanging around Cape Canaveral a long time, and he gets his shot, you know, boom, he can go. And they also send up a laboratory animal along with him to test the radiation and the Van Allen radiation belts and the cosmic rays and the genetic unpleasantness and that whole business. And so they decide to send along this frog, because they can cut him up afterwards, you know. And they're in orbit for 63 days, man, the man and the frog. And they come back and they land. Perfect landing, man. Beautiful in the Utah salt flats. And everything is happening marvelous. And the country goes wild. That pandemonium breaks loose. There's citations and congratulations from every country. And there's parades. There's a ticker tape parade up Fifth Avenue in New York. And everybody's flipping out, man. There's pictures of the cat and the frog on the cover of Time and Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report and Life magazine. And to top it all off, they're booked on the Sullivan Show.
We have a big show for you tonight.
And Signor Wences does his bit, and he splits, and the spot comes on, and out comes the astronaut. He's carrying this frog, and Sullivan becomes very effusive, and the congratulatory on the whole scene, and the medals and the ribbons and the ring ding, and the this heroic man and this heroic frog all alone in space for 63 days. I know the kids in the audience would dig to get a closer look at this little fella, and he reaches for the frogman, and the astronaut flips. Get your hands off my frog.
Mr. Romo, what do you mean when you say that you're hung up? When you came to the studio this morning, you were over 2 hours late, and when I asked you where you'd been, you said that you had gotten hung up.
Yes, I had been gotten hung up. That's like the all-purpose excuse, you know? If I was going to say it in English, I'd say, I know I'm late, but something very involved that wasn't my fault happened, and it ate into my time. Look, like I had to wait for a long-distance call or something.
Oh, is that what it was? You had to wait for a telephone call.
No, man, I did not. I got hung up. You don't understand. Look, you say hung up when you want to discourage further inquiries, you know? Hung up is a universal kappa. It's the one excuse that can't be questioned. You know, like if you're waiting for somebody and he's late or he doesn't show at all. And then when you see him again, he says, what? He says, I'm sorry, baby, I got hung up. It takes the burden of being angry off everybody, you know? Because it wasn't anybody's fault. Like you were suddenly snatched out of wherever you were and locked into space for an hour. And there you were, yelling and screaming, and then suddenly, boom, right back into reality again. And the first words you hear are, you're late. And you say, well, I'm sorry, man, I got hung up. And the only thing to say to that is, it must have been terrible, you think?
I'm sorry I asked.
Yeah. Well, there are all kinds of hang-ups, though. In fact, talking about hang-ups is a hang-up. You know, and the more you talk about it, it can become a drag. Because it's, you know... Now, anyway, if you say Max is a very hung-up cat, the meaning is different, because you're saying he's got psychological problems, he's very twisted, you know, he's blocked. Anything that can command your attention exclusively, is a hanger. Like, I was over at this cat's house, and he went into the bathroom, and he was going for, what, an hour and a half? So his old lady went in after him, like any old lady should. And when what had happened, I think he had accidentally dropped some cigarette ash into this bathtub, and he got hung up and watched it float. The same cat walks into Figaro's one day, and he's got no hair at all on his head except for maybe a couple of little tufts, and there are three or four Band-Aids stuck around his ears, and I say, hey, man, what happened to your hair? And he says, I was shaving, and I got hung up. This can happen to you. Look, practically everybody has gotten hung up one time or another counting the holes in the acoustical tile, right?
I think we're getting hung up on this subject, Mr. Romo.
Well, Dick, man, it's a very important thing. Here's a hang-up for you. Did you ever just sit and think for a minute how large your tongue is?
No, I can't say I have.
Yeah, just think about it. A tongue is a very large thing.
I've never thought about it before. My George, it certainly fills up most of your mouth, doesn't it?
It's big, yeah.
Strange. This enormous muscle in the middle of my head.
Huge.
It makes it a little difficult to talk, doesn't it?
Like in Zen. The Zen Buddhists have these koans. You know, they're riddles that you meditate on. And the whole purpose of the riddles is to hang you up. Like, we know the sound of two hands, but what is the sound of one hand? Now, that's had Buddhist monks hung up for years.
Well, Mr. Romo, I'm afraid we're going to have to take a break for a few minutes.
Oh, really? Oh, great. Oh, wow.
Hello, everybody. Tom Savino coming to you from Burbank, California, Lion's Den Studios, live in Burbank, California, land of make-believe and fantasy. Listening to Savino Veritas, and tonight we're doing a special show on hip speak from the 60s and current day. Let's listen to some more hip speak of today.
And now, 9 more Urban Dictionary definitions you need to know. Sporking, spooning with an erection. Barry and Elaine's cuddle time turns into sporking after two glasses of wine. Store d'oeuvres, free samples at the grocery store. Your family is so poor, they eat store d'oeuvres for dinner. Clutch oven, to fart in a car full of people. Jenny clutch ovened the carpool because she didn't get shotgun. Man stand, to stand outside a store while your significant other shops inside. Barry did a man stand outside Dillard's while Elaine tried on girdles. Nerd jack, to dominate conversation with talk of obscure passion. Frank nerdjacked Thanksgiving dinner again with his Doctor Who fan fiction. Irish handcuffs, holding an alcoholic drink in each hand. Can you get the door for me, bro? I've got the Irish handcuffs over here. Manther, an older man who dates younger women. Uncle Ted bought tickets to the Katy Perry concert because he's a total Manther. Mompetition, competition between mothers. Rebecca spent $900 on christening photos to win her mompetition with Annie. Interesting. Not interesting at all. The only thing I could say after Jerry's boring story was, oh, interesting. For more definitions, visit urbandictionary.com. While you're there, be sure to look up shexting. It's kind of gross.
To put on, to put down, to come on, to come down, and to bring down. These expressions all sound similar, but have distinctly different meanings. Let's examine some of these phrases with an eye towards clarification, shall we?
Well,
how about come on, to come on?
Yeah, coming on is like how you present yourself to the world, out front. Or like in any given situation, you think?
I'm afraid not, I'm
sorry.
Yeah,
well, don't be afraid, I'll help. Like, if you're hip, you generally come on cool. If you get bugged, you know, like drug with a catch, you'll come on salty. Squares generally come on, corny. Well, what can I tell you?
Corny, is that a hipsterism?
Yes, it is. It is if a hipster says it. The words change all the time. The old words keep coming back. Dig, if you know a cat is hip, he can say anything, man, like sounds or hubba hubba or reed or vowdy. He has to be very hip, of course. But you know that if he's not in that bag, it's cool. Anachronisms add a little color, you know. Like it's a gas to pick up on Rudy Valley records. Like, you know, stick one in between Miles and Ornette Coleman. But if that's your groove, baby, I mean, your all-around bag, forget it. You know what I mean?
I see. Do you hipsters regard squares as the enemy?
Oh, no, man. Squares are cool. You know, enemy, if they attack you one way or another. But you've got to have them. They run the subways like it's not their fault. It's just the bag they're in. I mean, unless they come on at you, like I said. If they come up and say, you've got to play by the rules, boy. Well, man, that's a stone drag. Coming on. Coming on is also when a cat has an overdeveloped personality. You say, he comes on strong. It's like the Dale Carnegie syndrome, you dig? You could say he comes on.
I see.
Yeah. I'm glad you see. There's another meaning, though. When you come on with a chick, you are sounding her, you dig? To make a sound. You are, demonstrating a desire to become intimate with her.
Mm-hmm. How about come down?
Well, you come down when whatever willful chemical self-poisoning you have undergone, if you have undergone it, to change your perspective, regardless of its size, when that wears off, you think?
Hmm. I understand there have been, from time to time, certain isolated cases of the usage of narcotics on the hip scene.
No, man, that's just an ugly rumor, you know?
I see. Bring down.
Right.
I beg your pardon?
It is. Oh, yeah. Bring down. Well, that's a kind of a person or thing or situation that makes you come down. You know, a stone drag. Like, you don't have to be high to be brought down. Like, when you're feeling good or maybe you're just feeling acceptable. You know, and then you get some bad news, you get brought down. Brought down from one level of psychic vibration to an inferior level of same, you know. Well, some people are chronic bring downs. They never get asked anywhere. They say people all the time about them is said, man, don't bring him along, he's a bring down. Like, there's this one cat. Now, he is such a stone bring down that you can use him for an antidote. That's how he exists, you know, like he knows his knowledge of this. Like, if you ever take too much of anything and you want to get off of it, you send for this cat. And he walks in and says, hello, George. And pop, again, wham, there you are. That's it, you're down. And then you say, thank you, Herman, you may go, and he splits. He serves his function. You know, God in his infinite wisdom made Herman a bring down. Now, what can I tell you?
I see. To put on. How about a put on?
What?
A put on.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Man, well, man, you keep reading your little list there and asking me all these things like... it knocks me out. All right, I'm going to blow it. I know you know what all these things mean. I can tell, man, like you're putting me on. You're very hip, you know? Yeah, you are. Stop, don't be embarrassed. You're about as hip a cat as you're going to find around, you know? So, like, I should be asking you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Romo. Coming from you, that's certainly flattering.
Well, that's not very flattering, really, for long, because right now I'm going to tell you that it's not very true ever. You know, not for a moment. See, I was putting you on. That was a put-on. I mean, I didn't mean it. But it was a lie, and I enjoy it. And I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings.
That's quite all right.
Now, buck up. That was a demonstration from which we learned two things, you know? One, what a put-on is. And two, that it is inherently vicious. Like, the whole point is to put people through changes. There, again, see, another word, beautiful, changes. That comes from the music, you know, where it is when a chord changes. But now it mostly means intellectual, emotional head changes. Like you take the lid off your Maytag and there is a giant octopus thrashing about, you would go through a change. But like if I was with you and I said, what octopus? Man, you're out of your nut. Then it would become a put-on. There are some cats who never stop. You know, their whole existence is dedicated to putting on the world. It can become a way of life, and it can also become a drag.
Some of the hip antecedents go back quite a ways. Shakespeare, in As You Like It, used the line, you have put him down, lady, you have put him down. Does put down on the hip scene have the same meaning today?
Yeah, so long as you're talking about the same thing. I mean, I guess it does, then, because if you are talking about the same thing, it has to.
Yes, I see.
Yeah.
What do you actually do to someone when you put him down?
Hmm? Oh, you destroy the man, you know, verbally. But like a cat has got to have done something first in order to get put down. Because unless you're an evil cat, you don't go around putting people down for no reason, you know? So when a cat does some dumb, uncool thing, say like he runs up to you on the street and screams, have you got any dope? You know, then it's a moment of horrible truth. Like, whether you do or don't, it doesn't matter. The first thing you've got to do is cool the cat. Then you can put him down. Like, you could say, my good man, and walk away very quickly with great dignity. Or you could say, no habla inglés, and look at him that way. Or you're not real. And then you can put him down with a look. This is a look that's very hard to describe on a record, you know? You look at him with eyes and a look that say, I will never look at you again and like you. No one I ever know will ever look at you again and like you. You will never be invited anywhere. You will never be told anything. You are a menace. Go away. You know, you look at him like that. That's a put-down.
Mr. Romo, I must admit that I'm puzzled. You hipsters claim to be such relaxed, free spirits, yet your rules for social behavior are even more set, tight, and rigid than those of square society.
Yeah, well, dang, it's simple. I'll spell it out for you. You know, a lot of the simple, everyday behavior is illegal. And so there's always a lot of heat on the scene. And, you know, you've got to protect yourself. Now, if you break the rules of hip, you get put down, that's true. But you break the square rules and they throw you in the slam, and that's a big difference. Now, anyway, like, there's only two basic rules in hip. You protect yourself from the possibility of police intervention, which means you don't associate with uncool people and things. And you protect your state of mind. Now, that means you don't want anybody around who's going to bring you down, right? We talked about that. You understand what I mean? You follow the hip commandment. Thou shalt not bug thy neighbor, which means be cool. That's all.
Cool. Cool is a word that seems to change meaning every time it's used.
Yeah, it does. Cool it means stop it, you know, or change the subject or split, or it's a warning, all those things and just that one thing. It's cool with me means okay, you know, it's okay. It's cool means it's all right or it's not dangerous. Cool means something all by itself, you know, but it's like trying to define hip, you know, or hip in general or righteousness, you know. You can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but you, man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is. You know, like, here's an example. Say you're going out and done in your head, you know? Or you stayed in and done in your head and gone out, or you've done both everywhere you went. And it's 4:30 in the morning and you're in a diner eating your banana cream pie. And sits down right opposite you, a cop. Now, your natural reaction is going to be,
You know, I want to laugh hysterically, you know, but some part of you says, nay, it says this is an urge of some self-destructive part of you. And you say to yourself, be cool, you know, unless, of course, you blow your cool and come all unglued in front of everybody. Then no use to say be cool because it's happened. And then you're going to attract the attention of the cop, and he's going to regard you as a menace. And this will get you a reputation as a very uncool face, having everybody seeing this cop regard you as a menace, and all in all, it's a drag, you know? The hip thing is to be able to perform the exactly appropriate action at all times, and that is not easy. It can, you know, either what it leads to paranoia, you know? What's that? You know, who's that? Who's out there? What's that car? Who's in that car? Who's who? Why is that car there? That car wasn't there. What? You know? The what, who, where. The eyeball disease. You get jumpy. It creeps up in you sometimes. Paranoia is the hipster's disease. Yeah, like I was at a party once, you know, in the cemented park out in front of the UN building. You know, and I got drugged, so I split. Then I walked over to 2nd Avenue and 40th, and I went to this little restaurant, you know, in Needix or Rikers or something. It doesn't matter. And I ordered a bowl of Jell-O, you know, with milk, raspberry Jell-O. And it was great, so I ordered another bowl. But halfway through my third bowl of raspberry Jell-O, I realized that if I ordered another bowl, the counterman would call the cops, you know. There's this nut eating Jell-O, looks funny to me, better come over and pick him up. You know, so I split, you know, I got in the wind very carefully. There's a definite way to do that. It's sort of like, well, I've had enough Jell-O, now I just think I'll go for a walk. It's a very touchy situation. So I get out and I go to 42nd Street to a Rudley's and I have another bowl of Jell-O, same kind. And man, I want to tell you, I worked my way up to 68th Street, eating Jell-O, driven by hunger and paranoia. You know, because life is not without its hazards, man. You know what I mean?
We've been talking about cool and its ramifications and how it applies to the hip scene. But maybe you could give us some examples now of the opposite of cool, uncool. Just exactly what is uncool?
Yeah, why don't we have some thoughts on that? It's uncool to claim you used to room with Bird or that you have Bird's axe. And, you know, it's even less cool to ask, who is Bird? It's uncool to nod on the street corner waiting for the light to change. And it's uncool to let anybody know your uncle is a registered pharmacist. Uncool for the whole family. You know, it's uncool to buddy with a known fink. And it's uncool to ask, where'd you get it? It's disastrously uncool to let friends use your pad as a forwarding address for packages from Mexico. You know, and it's uncool to ask, where'd you get it? And it is uncool to wear shades after sunset, you know, unless you should be wearing shades after sunset. You know, in which case it is uncool to take them off.
Come with us now as we follow Geets Romo in a search for what the hipsters call the action. Mr. Romo is our guide on this field trip. So as not to attract attention to myself, I'm disguised as a hipster, wearing a dirty gray turtleneck sweater, a purple cardigan, green trousers, and tennis shoes. I'm speaking into a microphone, which is cleverly concealed in a very convincing false beard. The tape recorder is in a large brown paper bag with a grease spot on it. Hey, Daddy-O, how do I look?
Oh, the humanity. Okay, you know, just don't talk too, you know?
Oh, good, we're in luck. Someone's coming down the street now who seems to recognize Mr. Romo.
Hey, baby, what's happening, man?
Hey, nothing. There you go.
Yeah. And like, who's that geek with the microphone in his beard?
Yeah, well, you wouldn't believe me because I don't believe me, but it's cool, you know?
You sure?
Yeah. Right, I'm sure, okay.
So news or what's happening?
Nothing. You got it all, baby.
Oh, well, it's a drag. Indig, baby, I gotta split. I gotta go to work, pay the rent.
Yeah, you're okay.
Later.
Yeah, later.
Who was that, Mr. Romo?
Benny Gillette, he's in the insurance business.
Mr. Romo? Geets, look. Mr. Gillette, he's walking right in front of that cab.
Yeah, so he do? Thud, look at him, body English, beautiful. That's cool, don't worry, man. You know, I seen him take about 3 big falls, you know, and 1 truck fall, which, you know, he came out the worst, but it was okay. He's in the insurance business. Yeah, you get it? The insurance business.
We're now walking down one of the main streets of colorful New York's Greenwich Village. This is a neighborhood, apparently, in which Mr. Romo seems to have a number of very colorful acquaintances. He's being greeted by various friends of his, very colorful people in their colorful costumes. We're walking slowly down MacDougal Street.
There is a very beautiful girl standing in front of a small delicatessen here. She's smiling at Mr. Romo. Mr. Romo, Keith, who's that lovely creature?
Well, I hate to tell you, man. That's not a chick. That's Morris the Booster, you think? He's probably got half that deli stash under his skirt, you know?
Well, I'm sorry. That's a beautiful...
Yeah, no, don't be sorry. Just walk on. Listen, don't stand there either, you know, gaping and pointing, man. That's very rude, not to mention uncool. Listen, let's go in here where we can talk, huh? See, so that's what's happening, you know? Everybody's got his own shot, you think?
Oh, whatever happened to Boogie Woogie?
Got what it deserved.
Now we're standing in the heart of Times Square. It was Mr. Romo's suggestion that we move from the village to... what happens in Times Square, Mr. Romo?
Well, everything happens. Last time I was here, they were taking down the two huge people on the clothes sign. I usually come up and look at the light bulbs, you know? But I wanted to show you something specific, man. You see that cat standing over there by the litter basket, the huge litter basket?
Yes.
Yeah, there stands a victim, man. A victim of a vicious riff. His name is Charlie L. Miller. He comes from Horse Breath, Montana, you know, that's in the Central Stranded Time Zone, forever. See how he's standing with that look of expectancy? You know, when he first came to New York, somebody told him that old adage, you know? If you stand on Times Square long enough, you're going to meet everybody you know. You know, he came to New York in 1948.
He's been standing there ever since?
Ever since, you know, except for a couple of weeks when he came down with mononucleosis.
Oh, the poor man. What does he do in the daytime?
Well, he's president of the Chase Manhattan Bank during the day.
Oh, Romo, you're putting me on.
Yes, right. Ah, at last. Look, there's hope for you after all. Get rid of that beard, you know, and let's split. Congratulations, we'll have a celebration, all right? Let's have a cab on you.
And now, 9 Urban Dictionary definitions you need to know. Fart blanche. Permission to fart freely. Carrie was given fart blanche around the house for the weekend. Bropocalypse. A large gathering of bros on a mission to get drunk. Quarter beers are a sure sign of the coming bropocalypse. Make it snow. To throw diamonds or cocaine in the air. I'm so rich, when I hit the club, I make it snow. Dankrupt. To be out of marijuana. Johnny couldn't pack a bowl because he was dankrupt. Moobs. Excessive breast fat on a male. I love to bury my face between his moobs. Clam jam. The female version of a cock block. Jenny is a dick because she clam jammed Rachel. Notialize. To ignore friends in public for your smartphone. Jenny is a dick for notializing at brunch. Meat sweats. To perspire while eating large amounts of meat. Our dinner date was ruined when Mark got the meat sweats. Scrouvenir. Items kept after sleeping with someone. Jenny's new shirt is a scrouvenir from Ted's house. YOLO. Carpe diem for stupid people. Let's have another drink because YOLO. For more definitions, visit urbandictionary.com. Be sure to look up Beef Walk. It's quite amusing.
Into the microphone. say this is a wonderful thing, what you're doing, you know? So the public can pick up on what's happening, you know? Straighten everybody out, let them know where this whole other scene is, where it's at. You know, so everybody will stop coming on all the time. And then we'll get you the world. You must need it. So that was a smart move, you know what I mean, or something?
Hello there, and Mr. Romo, would you speak into the microphone?
Your language instruction record in spoken hip. Now that you've studied this record, you should be able to work hip expressions into your everyday conversation. For only with practice will you gain the confidence and authority that's necessary to convince a real hipster that hip is your language.
Yeah, right, worker man.
Experiment with using the words like and man. Try this.
Every time you'd ordinarily pause in speaking or say, say like. Remember, any declarative sentence can begin with the word like and end with the word man. I am going to the post office becomes hip by saying, like I'm going to the post office, man, or man, like I'm going to the post office, or even man, I'm going to the post office, like. You dig? Then add dig and I'm hip. Like, man, dig, and I'm hip are the key to basic spoken hip, and the imaginative student might well be able to pass himself off as a hipster with only these four expressions.
Oh, true. Sad, 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 but true.
Unfortunately, we can assume no responsibility for the results obtained by putting the information contained on this record into practice.
Cop out.
Do you have anything to add, Mr. Romo?
No, that was very eloquently said, baby. Just tell him to play it cool, you know what I mean?
All right, as Geach Romo says, play it cool, and good luck.
Yeah, okay, now that's over. Can I have my bread?
Well, thank you for listening to Hip Speak tonight on Savino Veritas. And join us next week, next Thursday at 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, and all the other times in between on Savino Veritas. This is Tom Savino saying good night.
Sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end.
By George, he's got it. It is the end.
No, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.